This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, this is Jay Harwich with another edition of Amazing Mets Alumni Podcast. My special guest today is Ed Cranepool. Ed, first of all, how are you feeling? You know, 3 years removed from May, from your kidney transplant, everything kosher with you?
Everything is great. Fortunately for me, I feel so good. I want to make a comeback when you come to the ballpark.
Right, and you know, you're going to be one of the guys played in the old Timers Day game in August 27th, and a couple of swings left or whatever.
You know? Well, I'm ready to swing, but I don't know who's going to run for me. We'll find out.
Yeah, it should be a great day. We have, from the 62 team, Eddie, we got Frank Thomas, Jay Hook, Craig Anderson, Ken McKenzie, and then you know, the 69 team, you know, Cleon is coming and Ron. So it should be good to see the old guys again.
It's always good. I'll tell you what, and I always like to see my roommate, Frank Thomas, who I started with. You know, he was 34, 35 at that time, and I was only 17.
You know, he told me, Eddie, he's 92 now. He said he hit a home run to Polo Grounds, hit a home run at Chase Stadium. He wants to hit a home run at Citi Field.
Well, Frank's in great shape. He keeps himself in good shape. He'll be ready to play. And I'll tell you what, he'll challenge anybody and catch their best pitch.
He still has the record. He's got he's got a homer six straight games. I mean, before Alonzo and Kingman, he was the guy, right? I mean,
he was a good home run hitter with Pittsburgh, and he came to the Mets. He was the first big name that could hit some home runs. I think he hit 34 the first year. And he was my roommate, and he took good care of me.
And do you think you're the last of a dying breed? When I'm at the late, you spent 62 to 79 with the Mets with one club. You know, Molina's with the Cardinals, a couple of bits. That's passe now, right? Nobody stays that long with one team.
Not really, especially with free agency. I mean, the players are controlling the market right now. They can move around, and most of them don't have any loyalty to a ball club because they have an agent involved, and they seek out the biggest contract. And sometimes it works out well, sometimes it doesn't. I love New York, and I wanted to stay here.
Did you have a choice with the White Sox? We signed them to Monroe High School. Was there another team involved?
When I first signed, I could have signed with the White Sox. Yeah. I worked out for a lot of ball clubs. I could have been with the Yankees. I was a Yankee fan growing up. But, you know, the Mets were my first choice. It gave me an opportunity in the major leagues in a hurry. I didn't think it was going to be that fast 2 days after graduation. But it was a long existence. We finally won the World Series after 7 years, which was great. And I'll tell you what, you became a name in New York, and it's been a great thing for me.
So it's been 53 years since 69. And you can still probably walk to any restaurant in New York, get a free meal.
No question about it. You can walk down the city of New York, and somebody's going to wave to you and yell to you. I've had bus drivers, garbage men stop on the streets in New York. It's been amazing that the existence of the 69, you know, history is just continues to last, and people still want to talk about it this day.
Yeah, coming up to one kind of sad day, April 2nd, 1972, Gil Hodges dies of a heart attack. And, you know, you and Ron and Cleo and I were going to go up to Cooperstown. What made him such a great manager? Why was he so revered?
Well, everybody liked Gil and respected him because he was a great manager. He was a great player in New York. And he treated everybody the same. He was a very strict disciplinarian, and he only had one set of rules for 25 players, and that's different. A lot of guys have different rules for different players, but he didn't care who you were. You had to play the game professionally. You had to know the right way to play. And you didn't cost your ball club, you know, mistakes, mental. Physical, he never chastised a player, but if you made a mistake and threw to the wrong base, he let you know it.
You know, since I switched jobs to be more involved with alumni and looking at the research, what I realized about Gil, he used everybody on the entire roster, guys like Bobby File and Al Weiss, you know, Rod Gaspar, they all had a role. It wasn't just the big guys, right? I
mean, you're correct. 69 was a team, and that, if you looked at it, everybody contributed, and that's why we beat the Chicago Cubs. They had the best eight-man lineup. National League, but they got tired in August. The Mets never got tired. We utilized every player on the ball club. That's what made Gill such a great manager. He convinced 25 players that platooning was in the best interest of the ball club and yourself. And we all knew our role, we performed in that role, and we looked good. And going forward, we made Gill look good because everybody contributed. And if you went around the infield and the outfield, most guys were platoon players. We only had three or four guys that played regular. The other five, we switched players all the time, but putting two players together, they were all stars in that position.
And no offense to what happened after Gill, I mean, but the guys I spoke to said if Gill had lived, we would have won more than one world championship.
There's no question about it. We should have won in 73, right. Unfortunately. You know, you make mistakes during the season, you can pass them over.
Right.
In a short season, at the end, when the playoffs come, a mistake here or there, mentally, physically, or whatever, by either the manager or the players, cost you the World Series, and it cost us 73. The sixth game was the most important game the Mets have ever played. But we didn't have to win that game. Oakland right. had to win it. We wound up utilizing Seaver, short-rested, late in the year, which was a total mistake, because, you know, it's a long season. It's not a race, it's a marathon. And Tom was the kind of pitcher that needed his full 4 days off.
And he didn't have a good time, didn't have a bad time, but how did you put up with, you know, five of the first 7 years, 100 games and losses? It had to be tough in August going to the ballpark those days, right?
August, that would be late. We never got to the ballpark. You know, at the All-Star break, we'd be eliminated, really. And it was terrible. It's very tough to play that way on a bad ball club. So much easier to play on a good ball club with good players surrounding you and having a good team and having a reason to go to the ballpark. And 69 was so much fun. 73 was great because we were typical, but we all got healthy. There were a lot of injuries in 73, but we platooned, we made it through, and we played great baseball coming down the stretch. It's the one thing that you want to play when you're playing in the major leagues for is the World Series.
You know, tell me about that. You got to talk about Garcia, you got to believe. A couple of different stories. One, some people thought he was mocking him, Donald Grant. And I think, were you the one, you made him kind of apologize for that?
I did, because I was the one that there was the player rep of the ball club.
Right.
And I knew Mr. Grant for a long time, starting in 62. And he was a real businessman, very professional in what he did. And he gave us an incentive street, talking in the ballpark. And Tug started screaming. He was very vocal, Tug, and had a lot of fun playing the game of baseball. But I saw Donald Grant, as he was making a speech to the ball club, his expression on his face changed, and he cut his speech short after Doug started ranting and raving, trying to get the players motivated, and started saying, "You gotta believe, you gotta believe." And Grant walks out of the room. Well, I walked over to my roommate, who was Tug McGraw, and I said, "Roommate, you better go say something to Donald Grant. I know what you were trying to do, and I think the players do, but I don't think Donald recognizes the fact that you were trying to motivate us along with him."
And Tug apologized for
him. And I said, "Tug, go outside." And I walked him out to the extra
right.
room that we had, and I introduced him, you know, because Donald Grant didn't know every player on the ball club.
Right.
He was just,
right.
he was the president and ran the ball club. And Tug went up to him and started to talk to him, and they shook hands, and then he came back into the room, both of them together, and, you know, they had a smile on their face. But I think going out, I think Tug was going to another ball club at that time of the year.
So, Eddie, the first part, we have a lot of great historical events involving 69 team on, you know, April 15th, unveil the Tom Seaver statue. What did it mean to the Mets? Did you know when Tom came on the scene in 67, what was going to transpire? I mean, was it early to tell what he was going to be like?
Well, we knew he had something special because he was very professional in the way he approached pitching. You know, on the day he pitched, he stayed to himself. He looked over the rosters and the other ball club, and he was really pitching the ball game by himself and mentally getting himself prepared. But when he first started, he went to the minor leagues, and he won a couple of games. But his first year, I think he won 16 games in New York. But every game, we were in the ball game. He held himself. He never got knocked out. He never lost his composure on the field. We knew he had something special. That was the best draft the Mets ever made. And they were very fortunate to pick him, you know, from a couple of ball clubs. It was a special draft, and we selected him, and we knew we had a star.
And is it one game in 60s, is it one game that you remember, you know, was it the Black Cat game, the game when Kuzmin, I think, threw at Rod Sano after AG got hit? Was there one game that stands out in your memory before the playoffs started?
Well, you know, I think the second game in the Chicago series, you know, in the middle of the season when we beat him the first game, we beat you Fergie Jenkins, and then he pitched a near-perfect game. He was dominating that ball game, and when Seaver had it early on and was striking out people, you know you're in for something special because his control was so good. You know, he commanded the game, and he did it many, many times. You go on the field and you see Seaver, this is going to be something special. We saw the San Diego game, I think it was. He struck out 19.
Did you play that?
I played in that ball game. He struck out the last, I think, 9 or 10.
Somebody just recently said tied it.
But they didn't tie Tom Seaver, and I'm going to tell you why. The press doesn't write the story like it should be. Seaver struck out those guys in the last three innings of the ball game, not the first three when you're at the strongest.
Right, right.
So when you're facing a guy the fourth time around and you can strike him out and command the game in the sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth game, that means something. Just check the records today. Pitchers don't go five innings, and they think it's a great ball game. Seaver would be mad at himself if he didn't go into the ninth inning.
Tell me about when Nolan Ryan, he was with you guys, Gil used him like as a spot starter and added a bullpen. Could you envision what was going to take, you know, seven no-hitters, I think, after that? I mean,
The thing that you had to worry about with Nolan is what kind of control he was taking onto the mound. He could be great or he could really struggle, and it was tough to play behind Nolan. Seaver, it was a pleasure to play behind him. The game was fast. He got the ball, he threw it, and he got people out. Nolan was 3-2 on every hitter, walked a few guys, struck a couple of guys out. But when he was on, he was unhittable. And the only time I saw him, you know, was really in batting practice. And I didn't want to face him in batting practice because now his ball is all over the place.
Was it a playoff game or World Series? We pitched last six innings? Or
I think it was the World Series.
The bases loaded or something like that.
That was the World Series. He came in and just, you know, when he was on, there was no question about it. He could dominate the sport. But remember, the Mets had three good pitchers on our pitching staff. Jerry Kuzmin was right behind Tom Seaver. Seaver was great. Jerry Kuzmin was great. And Gary Gentry was another guy.
Rookie at the time, right?
Great potential, had a great arm. He hurt himself. He had bone chips. Otherwise, he was going to be just like Jerry Kuzmin, an outstanding pitcher. Nolan Ryan was always the odd man out. Whenever early in the season it was a rain out, Seaver had a pitch on his regular rotation. Then you got Kuzmin. You can't tell him to sit. You can't tell Gentry. They're all winning. They're all competitors. Who got sat down was Nolan Ryan. You know, he had no control.
We're going to say, this is the 60th year of Mets baseball. We're going to celebrate Santana's no-hitter, 10-year anniversary. It's hard to believe it. 60 years of all the guys, Gooden, Seaver, Kuzmin. It's one no-hitter. Isn't that kind of crazy?
Well, because you got to have luck. I mean, there was one controversial play with Santana, and you know it went his way.
Right.
That was fine. Look at Tom Seaver.
With Jimmy Qualls.
There was a guy that was a mediocre player, filled in, put him out in center field, hit the ball good the first time up, the second time, then he got a blue pit. And sometimes it's a couple of inches, sometimes it's a foot. Either way, and of course, he'd have a perfect game there.
Eddie, tell me about Casey Stein in the beginning. What was your memory of your first interaction with him, and how was that like?
I enjoyed Casey. He was a laughable guy, lovable guy, but he liked the young players. He took an affection to every young player. With the Yankees, if you remember, they always had young players coming up.
Right.
They did well against with Casey. With the Mets, we didn't have the prospects coming up. We had myself, was really the first minor league guy that came up. Young kid, I was 17, and he made me sit alongside of him. He'd always be talking baseball. He'd be the first guy to the ballpark, the last guy to leave. And he wanted you to get better. So he tried to make me better by working with me. He had Gil Hodges tutor me at first base. And by getting me in the ball games in 62 when I was 17, he didn't throw me out there to the Wolves. He let me play the eighth and ninth inning of certain ball games for defense, took Gil out and put me in. And then when it was time to play, he told me 2 days ahead of time, I'm going to play you a game on Saturday against the Chicago Cubs. Be ready. And that's the way he was. He wanted the young players to look good.
Did you think, I know Gil was always a player just a year or two, did you think he would become a manager or work with you back then?
Well, You don't know, because I was so young, it was tough for me to, you know, fraternize with all the guys. I mean, I didn't go out with them, I couldn't socialize with them, so I was a lone wolf. But Gil was a great baseball player, and he was a great man. Not, well, he became a good manager, but he was a human being. And we knew he had all the attributes to be a great manager. And once he took over, he was in control. Front office didn't come into his office and tell him who to play. He made that lineup up by the time he got to the ballpark, and he convinced players to do certain things, even though we weren't all in favor of it in the beginning. When you win, everything changes.
And you're looking forward to going up to Cooperstown in July?
I'm looking forward because he's finally getting the tribute that he deserved. He was a good player, and when you check the records, he should have been in based on that record early on.
Right.
Then later on, they finally, the Veterans Committee puts him in. He deserves it, and he would have been a class manager.
He was on. He was 35 straight ballots before he got in. You know,
that's a long time, and he has more votes than anybody, I guess.
Yeah, I'm happy for Joan. His wife is still alive, 95 years old, and his kids are going to be there on the Saturday. They're going to throw out the first pitch. So it's kind of, you know, what I hear was a good man, the Marine, and a good.
Everything about him was a class act, even though you had arguments with him. But he brought you into his office, and he learned from what he was talking about. When you made a mistake, he had you talk about it. He didn't talk about it. He said, "What'd you do wrong on the field?" And when you think about it, you knew why you were in the clubhouse with him. You admitted your mistake. You became a better player. And you know what? He dropped it in his office. That's the one thing I respected about him. He didn't go talking to the press about what you did wrong in the ball game. He protected his players.
That year in the playoffs, all the lefty guys beat the Braves. He hit, what, 3-3? He hardly didn't play that much in the World Series, right?
Well, we didn't play in the World Series. Only played one game, all the lefties. We dominated the playoffs. We'd have lost the playoffs if the lefties don't come through, because the pitching was terrible. But they changed in the World Series. They pitched great. The right-handers played. They struggled. We played one ball game against Jim Palmer. We knocked him out and scored 5 runs. So the offense came back.
You couldn't be too happy about that, right?
Nobody was. None of the left-handers. I think Art Shamsky led the team in hitting in the playoffs. Hit over 500, and then he doesn't play in the World Series. But, of course, that was Gil Hodges convincing us. We got to the World Series platooning. We're going to finish. Look at Don Clendenin. He hits 3 home runs in the World Series. Okay, then they take him out against Jim Palmer. Now, he was on his way to be the MVP. I play against Jim Palmer. We hit a home run. So now the first base has 4 home runs.
That's great.
So every position was productive. Third base, you had Charles and Wayne Garrett. Second base, we had guys that filled in. Al Weiss, who didn't play much the whole season, hits a couple home runs in the World Series.
Well, Jerry, I'm glad, it was 50-plus years, and it was still honoring the 69 Mets receiver, and Gil Hodges early on. We have the old-timers game. You're probably going to take a swing in August, you think?
Well, I'd like to take a swing. You always feel you can hit. You have hand-eye coordination.
Well, we'll get good. Dwight. How about have Dwight couldn't pitch to you?
I don't think so. I'm smarter than that.
Well, you're a good man. Thanks for spending some time.
Jay, it's always a pleasure seeing you. Thanks for being our alumni spokesman.
Thank you, Ed. I appreciate you, man.